Good evening.
It's good to be here as always. I always like to be over here with you folks. I'm sorry to hear that some of the congregation didn't feel like coming. But it's good to have the ones that are present. I want to say it's a joy to be here because that's kind of what I want to talk about tonight. I want to talk about a subject that's often overlooked. A lot of times I don't think we think about how we ought to be joyful and we ought to be cheerful Christians. In the work of the Lord. A lot of times we just don't think about that. I think we need to be focused so much. We got to stay on the straight and narrow, and we got to think about not sinning. We got to do this and not do this, and on. And there's so much. Sometimes we get caught up with it, and we think, well, we just don't have time to be joyful. We really need to love and enjoy what we're doing for God. If we do that, it'll work a lot better. If we look at it in that respect, Will Rogers said one time, "said if you get a job that you love, you'll never work a day in your life." And that's so true, isn't it? If you get caught up in something that you like, you're going to get tired anyway. You may be sweating. You may even work through lunch, not even stop to eat. You're so caught up in what you're doing, and it's tiring, and it's work. But you're enjoying it. You're loving what you're doing. That's the key to it. If you're doing that, then it's a joy, and it's fun, and you rejoice in it. You don't really look at it like it's a chore. Too many times, I think, we look at serving God as being a chore. You might not think it's all that important, but I think it's most important. First Thessalonians chapter 5 is where I'd like to begin our study tonight. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, Paul is talking here, and he's warning of the coming of Jesus Christ. He's telling them what they need to be doing, and he's telling us, of course. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, let's read verses 1 through 12, if you will. Paul says, "But of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them, as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But ye, brethren, are not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief. You are all the children of light, and the children of the day. We are not of the night, nor of darkness. Therefore let us not sleep, as do others, but let us watch and be sober. For they that sleep are in the night, and they that be drunken and drunken in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, for in the helmet the hope of salvation. For God hath not appointed us to wrath, but to obtain salvation by our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, that whether we wake or sleep, we should live together with him. Wherefore comfort yourselves together and edify one another, even as also ye do. And we beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you, and are over you in the Lord, and admonish you." To read the rest of that right there, that was sort of telling what they need to be doing, what we need to be doing, because the end of the world is coming. Christ is coming back. And he was trying to tell them you need to keep everybody on the right track and do all that you can. But he goes on a little further there, if you read the rest of it, beginning in verse 13. "And to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, and be at peace among yourselves. And we exhort you, brethren, warn them that they are unruly. Comfort the feeble-minded, support the weak, be patient toward all men. See that none render evil for evil unto any man, but ever follow that which is good, both among yourselves and to all men." And verse 16 says, "Rejoice evermore." That's the part I think we fall short in. You know, we do a lot of the other things that he's talking about there. We realize what Paul just said, and we endeavor to stay on the straight and narrow. And we do what we can, and we do watch for him to come. But a lot of times, I think, we forget to rejoice. We leave that part out. We just don't realize the importance of it, I think, sometimes. We don't realize that is just as important as any other thing that we could do. We didn't read the rest of that there in verse 17, 18, 19. It said, "Pray without ceasing. And everything give thanks. Quench not the spirit." Went on to say several things there that didn't really have to do with rejoicing, so I didn't read it. But it's things that we should do listed below rejoicing. My point is, rejoicing is just as important as those other things that we just read. They're all listed in there together, and when we're told to do something, one is just as important as the other. We can't leave anything out. James 2 and 10 tells us this. James 2 and 10 says, "For whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend at one point, is guilty of all." That's pretty plain, isn't it? I believe if it wasn't like this, we would all just pick the easy parts. We would just pick the commandments that was easier for us to follow, and we leave out the hard ones. what might be hard for you might be easy for me. I can look at somebody that's on drugs and I think, why would they do that? I don't understand that at all. You know, that would be easy. If all I had to do was avoid being on drugs to get into heaven, then I could go to heaven. But we all have different things, different crosses to bear, different things that bother us. So what might be easy for you might be hard for me. So God makes it fair on all of us. We have to keep all the commandments. We can't pick and choose, can we? He doesn't want us doing that. He wants us to keep all the commandments. So if we do all of them except one, then we're failing. We're not doing what God wants. He wants total obedience, complete surrender. I surrender all, the song says. That includes being cheerful. You know, when Philip baptized the eunuch, that's in Acts 8:39, it says, and when they were come up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord called away Philip, that the eunuch saw him no more, and he went on his way rejoicing. The eunuch went on his way rejoicing because he had been baptized, had his sins washed away, and he was happy and he was rejoicing. Well, that's the way we should be, and not just the first day. I think every one of us probably, when we were baptized, were just like the eunuch, we were probably rejoicing. We were happy. I know I was. I'm sure we all were. After a while, it sort of gets mundane to us, gets ordinary, and we sort of forget about that. But we can't do that. We need to rejoice always. Do that all the time, not just that first day we're baptized or that first week. But we need to keep that rejoicing all the time. Philippians 4:4 says, rejoice in the law always. And again I say rejoice. Philippians 4:4. So we should do that all the time, not just to begin with and just let it kind of die out. God expects us to rejoice. We've got a lot to rejoice about and a lot to be happy about and a lot to be thankful for. And we should keep that in mind, keep and think positive. You know, we're drawn to happy people, aren't we? People that are enjoying whatever they're doing. We're sort of drawn to those people. A lot of you, I know Mr. Ishmael Kirby. You know, you ever passed by his house, seen him sitting on the porch? It does my heart good to see him. He's sitting there. He'll wave as high as he can reach. He's a happy fella. They've had him a time or two to teach singing school over at Napoleon. Maybe more than a time or two, but I was fortunate enough to go a time or two when he was there. And he just get tickled at himself when he's doing it. He enjoys singing. He enjoys that so much, you can tell. I'm sure they paid him, probably, for what he did. I don't know that. But most likely they probably paid him for his services. But I believe he would have done it for nothing. He enjoyed it. It was not a chore to him. You could just see. And he inspired you to want to learn how to sing. If you watch him and see how much he enjoyed that, you wanted to learn how to sing. I think we could learn a lot from people like that. And it's a joy to be around people like that. And we ought to strive to be more like that, so maybe we could draw people to us and draw people to the Lord. As I said, I think we fall short in that a lot of times. We become a little bored with the service, a little less enthusiastic than we should be. And, you know, don't get me wrong, we're not supposed to just be real emotional like some of the charismatic folks. We're not supposed to be jumping over the benches and stuff and just carrying on too much. We're not supposed to do that. We're supposed to be orderly. But at the same time, we need to be cheerful and happy and act like we're glad to be here. You know, we're very fortunate, as Brother R.Z. wrote out in his prayer, and Brother Wayne mentioned, these people overseas in places that don't have the freedom we have, they can't worship like we can, and they would love to have it. And we have it. We have all of it. We have everything we need, and we should be appreciative. I think a lot of times we don't act like we are appreciative. We're sort of like the children we have today. We give them so much that they don't appreciate it. They got so many toys, they don't know how to appreciate it. They got too much. When I was younger, when I was a kid, we didn't have so much. I didn't have more toys than I knew what to do with, I can promise you. So when I got something, I did appreciate it. A lot more than children today. They'll have, had a yard sale the other day, some friends of ours, and they had little stuffed animals and things there. Some of those stuffed animals looked like they were brand new, never been touched. They had so much they couldn't play with all of it. I think that's the way we are. We have so many things over here. We got churches everywhere, and we got so many Bibles. People in other places don't have Bibles. We just take it for granted, don't we? We don't really think about what we got. We're not like the eunuch was when he was baptized there. We're not real thankful and joyous about it. So we need to have that every day in our lives. I was reading back a while about a fella. He was pessimistic, you know, this kind of fellow, you know. They always look on the bad side. They don't never see the good side. And he was like this. He always went about with a frown on his face. And he was a Christian. And He saw this fellow and he looked at him and he asked him if he would like to become a Christian. Well, the fellow took one look at him. It looked like he was weaned on a pickle, you know. He said, I got enough problems of my own. I appreciate it anyway, but no thanks. Can you see how that would probably turn the fellow off? He thought, you know, if you're a Christian, as sad as you look, you know, the way you frown, the way you carry on, if you're a Christian, I really don't want any part of it. So you can see where rejoicing would help us. Do you think maybe that's one reason God wants us to rejoice and be happy and sort of reflect happiness and sort of look like Mr. Ishmael does, you know, and just look like we're really enjoying what we're doing? You know, it makes, like I said, it makes you want to just help him sing if you could, you know. And so if we were like that with Christianity, it might make people just want to come in here and join us and just fill up these benches, come in here with us. It looked like so much fun instead of, if we let them think it's such a chore and it's such a burden on us, then they might not be as eager to come in here and as anxious to come in here and worship God, would they? But you know, the fellow, even though he was pessimistic and all, he was trying to do what was right, wasn't he? He was trying to get that fellow to come to church and be a Christian. He was attempting to produce fruit, which is what we're supposed to do. You know, the Bible tells us we're supposed to be fruitful. It's part of our duty. Be thou fruitful. Jesus taught that in Mark. He looked at the fig tree there, and the fig tree looked promising, but it didn't offer any fruit. It was worthless, wasn't it? So Jesus compared it to the nation of Israel, the fig tree there. He said it's fruitful in appearance only. Israel was spiritually barren, and that's what he was making there, the example he was giving, comparison. Do we give much thought to being fruitful? You know, we get up and say, well, I've got to get to church. You know, we're running late. We've got to hurry up and get on over to church. And then tomorrow we think of something else. We forget about church, maybe. And then when it comes to Wednesday night or next Sunday morning, we think about church again. Sort of forget about being fruitful. We're supposed to be fruitful all the time, aren't we? When we go out of these doors, this is sort of training for us. Instead of the end, instead of being all of it, this is sort of training for us to get us excited, to get us to go out and be fruitful. Work for the Lord. A lot of times we think this is all there is to it. If we come to church and sit here, we've done our duty. We just sort of get into that rut and get to thinking that. I think we know better than that. But a lot of times we don't do any better. But this fella was attempting to be fruitful. What kind of fruit are we supposed to produce? You ever thought about that, being fruitful? I heard one fella put it like this. He said, an apple tree produces apples. A peach tree produces peaches. He said, Christians are supposed to produce Christians. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to produce Christians. Add people to the church if we can. Get people to come to church and become Christians. Be fruitful. And one of the ways of doing that, I think one of the best ways, you know, we've got to have a lot of things. You can't just be rejoicing and that's all you got to do. You got to be knowledgeable and there's so many things you got to do. You got to try to live a life as a Christian. You got to be a good example. You got to do so many other things. But it's all going to come together and work a lot better if we're cheerful and joyous when we do it. You need to have a frame of mind that Jeremiah had when he wrote the words in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 15 and verse 16. Jeremiah says, thy words were found and I did eat them, and thy word was unto me the joy and rejoicing of mine heart. For I am called by thy name, O Lord God of hosts. He sort of got the message, didn't he, Jeremiah there. He said, thy word was unto me the joy and rejoicing of mine heart. Do we look at it like that when we read the word, or do we just kind of stumble over some of them words and just for the sake of reading a chapter? Sometimes I've done that, just say, well, I want to read a chapter today and just kind of not have a lot of time and read that chapter and not really absorb much of what I read. Need to be more like him. Be joyful in what I read and be thankful for that I've got the Bible to start with. You know, our relationship with God, whether we're in good standing or not, depends solely upon us. It's whatever we're doing. If we've got strong faith or not, it's all up to us. It's what we're doing about it. We're all in here. We're all individual. We come to the same church here tonight. But how we conduct our lives is up to us. We're free moral agents. We can do as we want to. You ever heard the term, marriage is what you make it? You ever heard that? I've heard people talk about clubs and so forth, and they say, you get out of it, really, what you put into it. You ever heard that? I've heard people say that about organizations and clubs and things. You get out of it what you put into it. It's true of a career, a job, a lot of things. Whatever you put into it, the more you put into it, the more more benefits you'll reap from it. If you're doing just enough work on your job to get by, if you're just barely doing enough to get by, and nothing more, nothing less, you ought to try changing. You ought to try doing more. If you would have a little joy and enthusiasm just on your job at work, not having anything to do with religion, just to make a point here, if you did a little more than is expected of you and be happy about your work, you'll enjoy it better. You'll feel better about yourself. And when you get your check, you'll know that you've earned your check. You know, you've heard the old saying, you've got to back up to the boss because you're ashamed to get the check because you know you didn't really earn that check that week. You didn't do enough. But if you'll do this, most likely you'll get a raise or a promotion. At the very least, you'll get, if you put your heart into it, if you'll try a little harder rather than do just the bare minimum. That will work in school, marriage, jobs, careers. It will work in a lot of things. I've seen it happen. If you'll read these books, they'll tell you the proper attitude is what you need to excel in anything. If you read a lot of books, it's a proven fact. I don't have any examples, any certain person. But if we want to be successful in a lot of things, that's what it's going to take. The cases I just mentioned, you might get a paycheck anyway if you just do the bare minimum. Just do what you have to do. You might still get a check. You might still be married. You might still stay married if you just do the bare minimum. You might get a passing grade in school. If you just strive to get D's, they're going to pass you anyway. You might go ahead and graduate from school. You had a low score, but you graduated anyway. But in the life of a Christian, I believe if we don't have joy and enthusiasm, I believe we're going to get left out. I don't believe we can get by with a bare minimum like we can the other. There's a difference there. We got to be a cheerful Christian. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 13 says, A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of the heart the spirit is broken. There's lots of things we could read. I looked at a lot of them. That's in the Bible talking about joy and talking about being happy and this and that. There's so many of them. It's all through the Bible, a lot of it. Enough to show us that God expects us to be happy and cheerful and joyous. Why don't we rejoice as much as we should? Why is that? Why do we get in this rut? And why do we just sort of slump down and really don't realize how much we ought to be joyous and not like the eunuch was that first day he was baptized, and we get in a rut and we sort of forget that? Why is that? Well, it boils down to appreciation, really, or lack of it, I think. Just like we were talking about children a while ago with the stuffed animals, the new ones had never been touched. They had so many of them, they didn't really appreciate it. It boils down to how much we appreciate it. You ever been in a checkout line and maybe you had whatever you got was $15 and a penny. You didn't have any change and you give a woman a $20 bill and you hate to get that change back. You'd like to have just that one penny. So she'll give you a penny and give you a $5 bill back. Well, that's pretty nice, isn't it? Do we appreciate a gift like that? Well, we do. That's nice. You know, it's good to help one another out like that. Let's go one step further. Let's say somebody walks up and just gives you a $100 bill out of the blue. Just hands it to you. Well, you get a little more happy about that. When that's more than the penny was, so you're a little more happy about that. Let's take it one step further. I do some silly examples. I do it to prove a point. Somebody just gave you a brand new house, just handed you a house. You'd probably be ecstatic. You'd probably want to do cartwheels if you could. You'd be jumping up and down. You'd be tickled. So the point I'm trying to make is, the larger the gift, the happier we become. The little penny didn't mean a lot to us. We appreciated it. It was a nice gesture. But, you know, we didn't write a thank you note or anything for it. But as the gifts got bigger on up to the house, we were ecstatic. So the bigger the gift, the happier we become. Do you see where I'm going with this? Do you know what I'm about to say? Of course. Apply this principle to Christianity. What has God given to us? Think about it. You know, I think sometimes we forget that. We talk about it all the time, but we hear it so much till it doesn't really sink in as much as it ought to. First time we hear it, it really gets to us, and after a while, we just sort of get in a rut. We don't appreciate it as much. James 1:17 says, every good and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights. He gives us all good things. He gave us Jesus to die for us. Made it possible for us to be here, for Brother RZ to pray to God today. That used to didn't be possible. People couldn't do that. They couldn't pray to God before Jesus died. We couldn't have come in here and done that. Jesus hadn't died for us. You see what a gift God gave His life for us. And He promised us heaven. A beautiful, blissful place that's so good we can't even imagine what it's like. But we won't inherit it if we're not cheerful and joyful. John 14:2-3 says, this is Jesus talking. He says, in My Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto Myself, that where I am, there you may be also. He said, you can come and go with Me where I am, the very best heaven. You're invited to come. God built heaven for us to enjoy forever and ever and ever. Christ said, I'm going to prepare the place for you. He's there on our behalf, making intercession for us, doing all He can to get us up there. And here we are, rejoicing more over $100 bill or a house than we do all of this. Wonder how God looks at that. Anyway, I've been guilty of it. We get caught up with things in this world. I wonder how God looks at that. When He thinks about, I gave My Son to die for you, we're preparing heaven for you. We're doing all that we can trying to get you up here, and you're getting carried away over $100 bill. And you're supposed to be a Christian down here. You're supposed to be joyful trying to save some of the lost and dying world, and you're getting caught up with $100 bill or a house or whatever, and you're not grateful for all that we've done. John 15:28 is talking here. It's a very powerful verse, I think, going along with what we're talking about. John 15:28. Jesus says, if ye loved Me, ye would rejoice. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? If ye loved Me, ye would rejoice. That don't leave a lot of leeway there to say, well, some people are more enthusiastic than the others, and they are. But we can all be happy and rejoice in our own way. You know, we can't be as happy as somebody else maybe. Everybody's made up different. But we don't have to look like we're pessimistic and down and out and we got a burden on our shoulders either. We can smile and be happy about it. And it shows when you do that. People can tell a lot by body language. They can look at us and tell if we're glad to be here or if we're looking at our watch and ready to go, hoping maybe it'll end any second. If you loved Me, you would rejoice in our own way. A lot of us enter the worship service was not as much as enthusiasm as we should have. You know, we just don't. We just come in here like somebody filling out income tax on April the 14th. Something we have to do, sort of grit our teeth, grin and bear it. Come on, let's get it over with. Let's come on in here. A lot of times we do that. You know, if I'd have got up here and said, is it my time again? Seemed like I just here the other day. I guess I can try to read something. Y'all wouldn't even want to hear me, would you? If I had an attitude like that, if that was the way I got up here and presented it, you'd think, well, if you don't want to do this, you know, we can get somebody else. That's what you would think. You wouldn't want to listen to anybody like that. What you going to learn from somebody like that that's pessimistic and not really happy about being here to start with and doing the Lord's work? And if we see it like that, God sees it like that too. If we can see a little bit, God sees a lot. If we can figure it out, He knows we're not as enthusiastic as we ought to be. You know, there's several things in the Bible that talks about joy and being cheerful. I want to read a couple of verses. Matthew 9:2. Jesus healed a man sick of palsy. You know, He did a lot of healing, and He did a lot of good when He was here, and He healed the blind and different things. This man was sick of palsy. Jesus said this. He said, son, be of good cheer. Thy sins be forgiven thee. Be of good cheer. Another one, that's, like I said, there's a lot of instances in the Bible we could read instance after instance that talks about cheerful and rejoicing. Matthew 14:27, Jesus was walking on the water, and the disciples were afraid. They saw him walking on the water, and a lot of things they didn't understand, and they were afraid. Matthew 14:27, Jesus said, "Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid." He said, "Be of good cheer." That's mentioned a lot of times in the Bible, to be of good cheer. What how the outlook that David had, we're going to read this, we're going to close. When he penned the scripture in Psalms 89, verses 15 and 16, you know, David had a real good way of putting things in words. David really loved the Lord, and with all the mistakes that he made, I think he really enjoyed serving the Lord. And you could tell that in the way he wrote things and things that he said, the way that he walked with God, even though he was human and he made a lot of mistakes. He still, God loved him because of his attitude, mostly. If you looked at it, David wasn't any better than anybody else, but his attitude really made him stand out above all else. That was what was different about David. He would always, he tried to serve God, and he would show reverence to God, and he would be joyful. If you read Psalms there, you can just, it's a lot more than I can try to convey to you and say about David. But he said in Psalms 89, verses 15 and 16, "Blessed is the people that know the joyful sound. They shall walk, O Lord, in the light of thy countenance. In thy name shall they rejoice all the day. In thy righteousness shall they be exalted." He's talking about joyful and rejoicing. He knew what it was. You know, Psalms, I think it's 66 in verse 1, says, "Make a joyful noise unto the Lord." Talking about singing, of course. That's what we're told to do, is make a joyful noise unto the Lord. I'd like for us to think about these things. If you would, try to be a little more pleasant about serving God. I think it will further the work of the church if we would look at it in this respect. If anyone here desires the services of the church, whether it's prayer for reinstating or for the need prayer for strengthening, or if you've never been baptized, whatever the case, would you notice Luke 15 and verse 10? Luke 15 and verse 10 says, "There is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner that repenteth." Isn't that something? When one sinner repenteth, there's joy in the presence of the angels. That's my lesson tonight. I appreciate your attention. If anyone here, as I said, desires services of the church, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.